This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan is away. 36 degrees in Miami, 14 degrees in Tallahassee. Florida woke up to record-breaking lows today. The rest of the U.S. is not much warmer. Folks in states like Minnesota and Wisconsin may laugh at snow and ice, but in the South, people are scrambling to survive the cold. Crops are freezing, homeless shelters are full, and people are struggling to keep their homes warm. Though the weather is a novelty for some, a call to bring out the forgotten sled and shovel, for others it's a matter of protecting their livelihood, even a matter of life and death. Today, confronting the cold front. What happens when sub-zero weather disrupts mild and sunny winters? Later in the hour, terrorism policy in the Obama administration. But first, what's your cold story? How is the cold affecting you? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org. And you can join the conversation on our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. With us is Kay Subic. She's a sales manager and horticulturalist at Lucas Nursery in Oviedo, Florida. She joins us from her home there. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi. Nice to be here.
So with parts of Florida in the 30s this morning, how are your plants holding up?
At the nursery, it's kind of grim at the moment. The ones we were able to put inside are hanging on. They're all right in the heated greenhouse. In the cooler barns, we're kind of crossing our fingers, but everything outside pretty much that had to be covered is not looking so great.
Do you have some species that go first?
Oh, yes. Your tropicals that normally grow in places like Miami, warm California, Hawaii, they're all part of the Florida landscape. People expect them to be, but they're the ones most susceptible. As much as we can, we put them in a heated greenhouse, but as far as people having them in their yards, it can be a real problem this time of year.
What are you hearing from your customers?
I had a lady come in yesterday, and she said she was almost in tears, and she said, my whole yard is gone. I need to redo it. And I told her, I said, well, wait a couple of weeks, and we'll start planning then. We're not out of the cold yet, but I imagine I'll have a lot more like that.
Well, you might get a boom in business from people having to replace their dead plants, but I imagine you're also going to lose a lot of stock.
That is the silver lining. We actually were prepared after Christmas. We got hit pretty hard last year when we had some very deep freezes. They weren't as lengthy as this, but we saw what could happen. So we were a bit down on the inventory at the end of the year so we could protect better what we do have.
And other than putting them in the greenhouse, what are you trying to do?
Not much else. We try to keep a few heaters in the cooler barns that are normally used for storage of things like fertilizers, but we roll big wagons of trees and plants in there. We cover what we could outside with frost blankets, but a frost blanket does not really protect against a deep freeze. And I was peeking underneath yesterday, and I was just shaking my head and saying a lot of this is just going to be thrown out.
Do most people you know even own winter coats?
They have them for their infrequent voyages up north. I brought out a hat yesterday when I was at work that I hadn't worn in 10 years. It was from my days in Ohio. It was a rabbit skin hat, and everybody was staring at me, but at least my ears were warm.
Kay Subic is sales manager and horticulturist at Lucas Nursery in Oviedo, Florida. She joined us from her home there. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Bill Strever. He is the author of Cold, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places, and he joins us from Alaska Public Radio in Anchorage. Welcome to you. Bill Strever joining us from Anchorage. Are you there, Bill?
Yeah. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks
hi,
for having me.
Good to talk to you. So I imagine in Alaska you think of 35 degrees in January as a heat wave, but we just heard Kay talking about what's happening in Florida. That whole state is under a red flag warning. What should people who are not used to cold be doing?
Well, lots of things, I guess. First, take a deep breath and try to enjoy the cold to the extent you can, and maybe don't focus too much on the negative. Always good to look at the positive. Good to take it as an opportunity to think to yourself about weather and about how weather works and about how cold snaps and cold periods have affected history, have affected culture. There's lots of interesting things out there on that front. And I guess also when it's that cold, you do have to think about protecting your property and even human safety. You know, kids especially, frostbite, it has to be a little bit colder than 36 to really worry about frostbite. But hypothermia, so two different things, and a lot of people don't separate them very well in their minds. Frostbite is when the tips of your fingers or your earlobes or even your face or your nose actually freezes, and the tissue freezes. The water that's in the tissue freezes and crystallizes, forms ice crystals, and it kills the tissue. And, of course, it's very, very painful and can be extremely dangerous, especially if it affects large parts of your body, like your entire feet and things like that. Hypothermia is just a cooling of your body. Your core temperature drops. So we're normally up around 99 degrees, and as your core temperature drops down to, say, 96, 95, starts to be quite uncomfortable. Down around 93, you start to forget things that you did just a moment ago. At 91, you're starting to become apathetic, and down around 90, you've sort of lost your ability to fight back, and that's when you're really in trouble, and you need somebody to save you if you're going to be saved at all. So with kids, with people that are in a remote area, say, that kind of thing, who are not accustomed to the cold, they're not accustomed to checking themselves for things like hypothermia and frostbite, this could be a real problem.
And, you know, your fondness for this weather notwithstanding, do humans as a species dislike cold?
Oh, I don't know. I actually think most humans, at least most humans I know, prefer cold to the heat. People say you can dress for the cold but not for the heat, and et cetera, et cetera. Of course, if you don't own a coat, as your last guest was saying, many people might not own a coat, or if they did, they might only have one for their infrequent forays to colder areas. If you don't have a coat, how are you going to dress for the cold? And all I can say there is, well, maybe try to stay out of the cold as much as you can, and use what clothes you do have to wear layers. You know, people in Alaska are very accustomed to wearing layers of clothes, which usually works a lot better than just throwing a coat over top of your T-shirt and Bermuda shorts.
Let's hear from Lisa in Tallahassee. Lisa, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hi.
How are you handling the cold down there?
Well, in Tallahassee, it's been really super cold in the mornings especially, but I thought I'd just call and let you know that we're actually trying to have some fun. The kids are having a great time at school, and a couple of houses I've seen where we're putting water over some trees. We actually had icicles hanging from a palm tree this morning, and the kids thought it was just great.
And I'm glad you're able to see the upside. Do you feel like you're prepared in terms of keeping your kids warm and the schools are warm enough and all of that?
No, they have winter coats. It's not going to last a long time. They stay warm when they're outside playing. They have gloves. They have coats. So they're just fine. But, yeah, it's definitely putting on a lot of extra blankets at night.
Lisa, thanks for your call. And Bill Stever, we also have a tweet here that says, Florida is freezing. I have new empathy for my elderly neighbors. Every joint is aching. I'll never complain about heat again.
Yeah, let's see if he sticks to that this summer in Florida when it's 90 degrees and 90% or 98% humidity. For Lisa, who just called about the palm trees, the kids might think it's fun to know that up in the Arctic, in the Alaskan Arctic way north, there's at least two places where people have made their own palm trees. One's made out of plywood, and the other one's made out of baleen from whales sitting out on the beach up next to the Arctic Ocean.
So palm trees in Alaska and icicles in Florida. What about other species other than humans? How do they handle it?
Well, you know, lots of species are very, very well adapted to cold. And in fact, humans are too. We're mainly adapted through behavior, things like wearing coats and controlling fire and that kind of thing, of course. But there's other animals that have lots of different, well, three main different kinds of adaptations to the cold. And one is to migrate, of course, and to fly south, like lots of retired people in the States, I suppose, go south to Florida to avoid the cold, and that didn't work so well this year. But migration is one thing you can do. Hibernation is another one, and we can talk more about that. And tolerating cold is another one. There's animals that tolerate cold, like moose, for example, that wander around when it's, to humans, quite cold outside, and yet they're very, very comfortable because they've acclimated to the cold. They've changed their physiology. They've changed their fur for the winter, and they're good to go for the cold.
And what about species that don't usually face cold? I mean, we're seeing news reports of iguanas dropping out of trees.
Yeah, well, that's right. These animals that aren't used to cold, they're going to suffer in times like this, and there will be lots of mortality for animals that aren't adapted to cold, just as there will be for plants that are not cold adapted. And that's just part of nature. You know, nature is the physical part of nature is extremely variable, and the biological part of nature is variable as well. So animals all the time are facing accidents and disease and predation and all these kinds of things. And in addition to that, they have to face the cold and deal with it as best they can. And iguanas in Florida are right at the northern end of their range. So it's not too surprising when you get cold snaps like these that iguanas are dropping from the trees.
Let's hear from Kim in Flagstaff, Arizona. Kim, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Got a little story here. I'm originally from Wisconsin, so I'm used to dealing with cold and snow. And when my family moved out here, I got a job working at an apartment complex, and I actually had a couple people from southern Arizona, from Phoenix area, come up to look at apartments in the winter. And, I mean, they were afraid to even walk on the snow. They had never seen it. They had never touched it. And there were many of my tenants that I actually had to help, you know, I teach them how to drive in the snow and the cold because they had no clue. They didn't want to even go out of their homes. And to me, that was very odd coming from a snowy area. And I just think, you know, maybe it would be a better and a good idea to possibly have, you know, driving lessons for those people who don't know how to drive in the snow and the cold and how to deal with it. And helping people cope, I think that might help the general population of areas that are not used to snow deal with snow when they get it and cold when they get it.
Kim, thanks for your call. This goes to the question of adaptive abilities, Bill Strever.
Yeah, that's right, adaptive abilities. I guess I would first ask Kim to come up here and give some of us Alaskans lessons on how to drive in the snow. It gets pretty ugly up here after a fresh snow as well. But also, I think a recommendation just not to drive. If your car is not equipped for driving in the snow and you don't know how to drive in the snow, probably best not to drive.
We are talking about how the cold is affecting you. We're taking your calls at 800-989-8255. You can also send us email. The address is talk@npr.org. The Arctic blast continues. Some spots in South Florida saw snow flurries. Seriously. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. We're struggling through a brutal cold spell, sub-zero temperatures in the plains and Midwest. The South is getting a blast of cold air, forcing people in Florida to actually put on gloves. We're talking about record temperatures with Bill Strever. He is the author of Cold, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places. And we want to hear from you. Tell us, how has the deep freeze affected you? What's your cold story? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Our email address is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation at our website. Go to npr.org and click on Talk of the Nation. Bill Strever, we were talking briefly about different adaptations, and one of them, of course, is hibernation, just waiting out the winter. How does that actually biologically work?
Yeah, well, there's different degrees of hibernation, and I think most people don't realize that. And maybe we'll just talk a little bit about squirrels, because that's ground squirrels, and not the squirrels you have down in Florida and in the temperate parts of the U.S., but the Arctic ground squirrel. And the Arctic ground squirrel is the world champion hibernator. It's just absolutely amazing what it does. As it starts to get cold, it goes to sleep like any good hibernator, and then its body temperature starts to drop, and its body temperature drops and drops and drops, following the outside temperature downwards, and it drops down to about 29 degrees or so. And at that temperature, its blood should be frozen. Its blood, if you took its blood out of its body and put it in a jar and put it in a freezer at that temperature, its blood would freeze. But it's in its body, the blood is not frozen. It's super cooled, as it's called. Super cooled, still liquid, but could be frozen. And then somehow at that temperature, the body temperature stabilizes through something called non-shivering thermogenesis, if you want to use big words. But its body temperature stabilizes, and it just stays right at 29 degrees or so, so the blood's not freezing. And then every once in a while, every couple of weeks or so, it starts to shiver, and it warms up. And it just does this spontaneously, because you can imagine an animal that cold, its neurons aren't really firing, it appears to be dead, very hard to detect a heartbeat, and et cetera. And yet it just suddenly starts to shiver, and it shivers, and it warms itself back up to its normal body temperature. And its brain starts to go into a sleep state, and it stays in that sleeping state for about a day. and then, or that dreaming state rather, for about a day. And then it starts to cool off again, just like it did at the beginning of the winter. And it goes back and forth through these cycles where it's hovering down right below the normal freezing point and then coming back up into a dream state. And it hovers through that through the whole winter. And you can imagine if you're a ground squirrel living in the U.S. Arctic, the whole winter is half the year.
A very long time, right.
So, that's right. So,
well, you know, I mean, other than it just being sort of cool to understand how a ground squirrel figures this out, are there things we can learn, adaptive capabilities or chemical capabilities, if you reverse engineered a ground squirrel?
Yeah, you know, I sort of doubt it. I know NASA has tried to look at some hibernation experiments with humans for obvious, you know, long-distance space travel type work and that sort of thing. And humans just aren't, we're just not built to hibernate in our, you know, current state of our existence. If we really can't hibernate. But humans do have, some humans anyway, have other adaptations to cold, some of which they can develop pretty quickly. Like, let's think of an example, postal workers, I think, in Quebec in Canada. We're looked at, and it turns out that every fall and as they go into the winter, their vascularization, their blood flow to their fingertips improves in the winter and keeps their hands warm. So that's a very short, quick turnover adaptation, physiological adaptations that humans have. And the same thing's been seen in workers in Antarctica. And you'll often hear people say, oh, I moved to, you know, pick your cold place, Alaska, Minnesota, whatever. I moved here a few years ago, and when I was first here, I was cold all the time, and now I'm cold-hardened, and I'm adapted to the cold. So, there are some physiological changes that people have gone through, but usually I think with humans, when they say I've adapted to the cold, what they really mean is they've gotten the right clothes.
Right.
They've learned how to wear clothes in layers. They've got a car now that has the right tires for the winter, and their heating system works properly and all that. But in their minds, they're now cold-hardened, and they're absolutely convinced that they're now physiologically much more adapted to cold than they were when they started.
Yeah, we have an email from Anne in Avon, New York, who says, I'm weighing in as a fan of cold weather. Remember, all weather is good weather. There's no such thing as bad weather, just bad clothing. We also have the opposite view from Bryce in Illinois, who says, with all due respect to your guest, for those of us with seasonal affective disorder, the cold does not make us feel more alive, but feel like we want to die. And better than coffee, no amount of coffee can make me want to get out of bed when it's freezing. That's why I'm soon leaving Illinois, where I am now, to return to southern Arizona. I know it's cold there now, but that's a fluke, and I'll take Arizona weather over Midwest cold any day.
There you go. A hater of low temperatures, that's great. And a lover of low temperatures is good, too. And seasonal affect disorder is also driven by darkness, I think. So you can't blame it all on the cold, but the cold does come with the shorter daylight hours in the north, and that definitely depresses a lot of people. It's a tough thing.
And it can be very risky. In the bitter cold, there are homeless people at serious risk. We are actually joined now by Kirsty Bierbaum. She is executive director of the Randy Sams Outreach Shelter in Texarkana, Texas, and she joins us from her office there. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
How is the cold affecting the shelter?
Oh, absolutely. It's so cold outside, and we've had an influx of people trying to get out of the, you know, the weather, those who are living on the streets wanting to come in here. So we've got about 86 beds available, and we're completely full right now.
And what have you done to accommodate the surge?
Well, you know, we've had to put up extra cots, and we've had to put mats on the floor and just, you know, get the community to help us and bring in coats and long johns and just, you know, lots of blankets, things that, you know, you wouldn't think about just having readily available at your home that we don't have here. So we've definitely relied on the community to step up and help us.
And are they coming through?
Oh, absolutely. We've been so blessed.
How cold is it there right now?
Well, right now it's about 30 degrees, and this past weekend, though, it got down to 9 degrees. And for us and where we are in the United States, that's just unheard of. So it's been a real challenging experience to try to serve as many possible people as we can.
Kirsty Bierbaum is executive director of the Randy Sams Outreach Shelter in Texarkana, Texas. She joined us from her office there. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And Bill Strever, you talked about the difference between frostbite and hypothermia. At what temperature should people be worrying about those?
Well, frostbite, really below freezing temperatures, you know, it is your blood and your fluids and your tissues have to freeze, so it has to be below 32 Fahrenheit. But hypothermia doesn't need to be very cold at all, especially if you're damp or if the wind is blowing. Hypothermia can overwhelm you very easily at the temperatures we're talking about here. And I would hope that Kirsty, and I suspect she probably is, Kirsty and other people that are running shelters are also trying to get the word out to people that do live on the street. Don't Don't try to tough it out. If you start to become too cold, one of the symptoms is that you become apathetic. So if you're trying to tough it out, thinking I'll just get through to the morning here on the, you know, in the outside somewhere, and then you start to realize you're very, very cold and you're shivering, you need to move in somewhere and get some help before your body tells you to give up and go to sleep and quite possibly never wake up again.
We are talking about the cold snap with Bill Strever. He is the author of Cold, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places. And we are taking your cold stories at 800-989-8255. Let's hear from Rocio in Charlotte, North Carolina. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hello. Thanks for having me on. My story is the following. My little chihuahua has normally followed the sun by moving his bed around, but now he's just managed to decide to sit right next to the space heater. He's not moving. We move his bed around just to keep him away from it for safety's sake. He moves it right back, and that's his spot.
In front of the heater?
In front of the space heater. If we turn on the fireplace, he is right there. But he's never done it to this. He's never done this before this year. He's 7 years old, 6 years old, and he's never done it.
Thanks for your call. We actually have another email about pets from Michelle in St. Louis, who says, please mention the importance of making sure that pets are considered when temps are extremely cold. They need warmth, shelter, water, which might be frozen, and possibly more food than usual to help their bodies provide fuel to fight the cold. Tender feet also get injured in ice and snow and should be protected or limit exposure.
And to add to that, pets, dogs, cats, but dogs, people like to play with their dogs out in the snow. Dogs can get frostbite. Watch
really?
For frostbite symptoms. Sure. My dog has unfortunately had frostbite, and I still don't understand it because he's gone out on much colder days before that and much colder days after that for long periods and not had any problem. But one little ski trip I was on last winter, he picked up frostbite in his snout and got lots and lots of sympathy and lots of biscuits while it healed.
And how does that evidence itself? How did you know he was frostbitten?
Well, a little bit at first by his behavior, but, you know, what people are always saying, oh, my dog's acting strange today, my dog's depressed or something. But and dogs, you know, dogs do have neuroses just like people, I guess. But after a while, I could see some swelling in his snout, and then the swelling within a day or two started to scab over. And it was obviously frostbite. It looked very similar to human frostbite, if you've seen that before.
We have a tweet here that actually might qualify as haiku. It says, prefab fire logs unobtainable, bed full of cats, outdoor plantings are toast.
So humans adapting, bed full of cats, that's great. And chihuahuas adapting as well from your earlier caller.
We have a pro-cold email here from Luke in Minnesota. I'm from Minnesota, where cold is the norm. If you ask me, anything under 10 degrees Fahrenheit is all the same. Same dress, same activities, same driving concerns, so it really hasn't impacted me at all. Well, this gets a little bit to that sort of cold macho that we see in the northern states, that, you know, there's that kind of chest thumping, I can handle more cold weather than you can thing that goes on.
Well, that's right. It's a big sport up here, isn't it? And I'm not going to wear a jacket today because, after all, it's only, you know, it's 10 degrees. It's a heat wave out. Yeah, people do that, and it's kind of silly in a way. And with all due respect to your caller, there is a tremendous difference between, you know, 10 degrees and 40 below, even on things like a vehicle and its ability to run and whether or not your tires are actually going to be round when you drive away in the morning or if they're going to be frozen into kind of an oval shape with, you know, a flat part, and you go thumping down the road until the tires warm up and things of that nature.
But you voluntarily experienced 40 below, right?
Oh, well, in my work and, you know, properly equipped 40 below, when properly equipped with the right clothes and the right attitude, I guess, and the right training, whether it's formal or informal training, to watch out for the kinds of problems that can come up. 40 below is not a problem. With all those right things in place, I want to emphasize that 40 below would obviously be very, very dangerous without the right equipment, the right training, the right attitude.
Let's hear from Tara in Tacoma, Washington. Tara, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much. First, may I say that this gentleman, his attitude, his voice, his ability to take every question and answer it perfectly, this fellow is fantastic. My issue is, I was raised in Detroit, Michigan, and spent the first 40 years of my life there. And it has to do with cold and metabolism. I have always felt that it was too hot. I don't care what it was. And I'm wondering, has that to do with possibly psychological or strictly metabolism issues?
Tara, thanks for your call. Bill Strever?
Yeah, that's a good question, how people experience the cold and how one person feels about the cold or the heat in this case relative to another person. And I think that's kind of a hard thing to get at. But my guess would be that it's a combination of how your body works, what your diet is, because different foods will definitely affect your feeling of warmth and even the reality of your warmth. And I think, as she put it, her attitude, how she thinks about the cold. And diet's something we haven't really talked very much about. You know, people who live in cold climates, especially very, very cold climates, minus 20, minus 30, minus 40, and on down, it's well known that fatty foods, and in particular some specific fatty foods, will keep you much warmer than, say, a bowl of rice or a starch-heavy diet. So the Inupiat or the Eskimos in Alaska tend to eat lots more meat, whale meat. Walrus is specifically a meal of choice for people working out in the cold. And I even have some Inupiat friends, and I've never done this, but I've had some Inupiat friends and colleagues out on the sea ice that would eat a stick of butter like a candy bar.
Well, also, before your head swells from the praise from Tara in Tacoma, I want to read you this email from Susan in Oklahoma, who says, "Cold makes you feel alive. Tell the gentleman from Alaska to go suck a salmon. The cold makes me want to find a very warm hole, crawl in, and pull it in after me. Just the opposite from alive." You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's take a call from Audrey in Minneapolis. Audrey, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yes, hi there.
Hi there. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, I live in Minneapolis, and we're pretty used to the cold weather. But this year, we had something that everybody here dreads, which is we had about a foot and a half of snow. And then on top of that, we got rain, which goes underneath the snow and turned into just solid ice everywhere. And the plows, they can't get it up when it goes. The temperature dropped, of course, for the last several weeks. It's been down. You know, at the daytime, if it got up to 10, it was a good day. And at nighttime, it was 20 below zero and wind chills 20 to 30 below. So the roads up here are, in Minneapolis, many of them are like ice skating rinks, especially the back roads, the smaller roads. And stopping at stop signs has become almost optional. If you can stop, then you may not be able to start again because you just slide. Yesterday, driving home, I was going about 5 miles an hour, and I slowed down because the car coming at me, we can't pass each other on the road, and we both slid sideways. Fortunately, we didn't hit each other, but we were both sort of sideways, perpendicular to the sidewalk, sitting in this road and laughing, of course, because what else are you going to do? You can't get out of it. But I just want to say I spent a season in Antarctica at McMurdo Station, and they're having heat wave this year. It's much warmer there. I have friends that, you know, email me, "Oh, it's 35 degrees today," and I get pictures, and they're outside in, you know, T-shirts and jeans and sneakers. So, well, we're getting it here. They're down there enjoying summer.
Audrey, thanks for your call. You know, this idea that when their streets are covered in ice that everybody just sort of figures out whatever they need to do regardless of traffic laws. We had a big snow here in Washington just before Christmas, and it was like end of days. I mean, people were walking down the middle of the yellow line. It just seems to sort of suspend normal rules of behavior.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. And you know, I really wish that more people, when the conditions are like that, they would just figure out ways not to drive, because it is kind of crazy. She mentioned these rain on snow events, and more people in the science community or the ecology community talk about these rain on snow events where you've got a layer of snow, it's quite cold, then you got a layer of rain on top of it, and that rain freezes. And that's hard on humans and hard on roads, but there's also lots and lots of animals that live in the snow, especially in the far north. Things like lemmings that everybody's heard of that live in the snow, and lots of insects. And they get that layer of ice between the snow and the ground, and that causes real problems for those animals. It also causes real problems for animals that are trying to graze through the snow, so animals like caribou, in some areas moose, although they're more grazing on shrubs, but muskox are in the same boat. So that snow on ice issue can be, or that rain on snow issue can be a real problem.
And just quickly, for people who are really hating the cold, what's your best advice to change their attitude?
go somewhere, well, first of all, go outside, take a deep breath, look around, then go back inside somewhere nice and warm and think about the cold and try to think of ways that, cold has affected our history and our culture, and there's lots and lots of them. It's just a way to enlarge your view of the world.
Bill Strever is author of Cold, Adventures in the World's Frozen Places. He joined us from Alaska Public Radio in Anchorage. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, New York Times White House correspondent Peter Baker joins us. He's written an in-depth examination of how the Obama administration is fighting the war on terrorism. That's next. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.